Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Homeownership Show with your host Richard McKenzie out of the greater Cincinnati area and northern Kentucky as well as Dayton, greater Dayton areas. And today's episode is all about a large apartment building. And building is kind of a relative word since you could say it's several buildings, but they're all connected together. And the basement was all accessible and garages all through one labyrinth in the basement. So then I guess we kind of call this one building, even though it appears to be a U-shaped several buildings. And what makes this property so unique? Well, it's not a new apartment building, not even in the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, but rather this is from 1945, making it 79 years old. So there's several things that we're going to be talking about as an investor and as a realtor. If you're a commercial realtor and you are selling one of these properties or you're helping your investor buy one of these properties, really want to navigate this water in the right way so you have an expectation of what typical things to take in consideration during the inspection. And then while you're being a maybe you're hiring a property manager, maybe you don't live in town, and you're hiring a property manager, what are things that they're going to need to look for? So a lot of things can put you in the poorhouse and ruin your cash flow, but a lot of things, if you do them right, can also keep you hit the ground running when you start taking over this property and keep things going with constancy. So we're going to cover a lot of those, and I really want this to be kind of an investor special, kind of a podcast today. So let's talk about this property. So how do we get to the property and inspect it and all that stuff? Well, let me tell you, it may take a couple weeks before you jump in and inspect this property. This is not something that, you know, as far as your due diligence period, hopefully you're getting 30 days instead of 10 or 15 or 20 even. Because with 29 units, what are the odds of all the properties having somebody there to let you in? Nil. What are the odds of having 29 keys and all of them work? Nil. What are the odds of you having the ability to get in all 29 units, and even if you do have the key, of somebody saying they're sick and they have a baby that's sleeping so they don't want to do it, or you have a vicious dog behind the door? Pretty high in that regard. So you really have to set the expectation of the owner and the listing agent that you fully expect to get in all 29 units, which is what we did on this case. We had to postpone 1 week. Why? Because the property manager for the owner was somewhat new, wasn't really that aggressive, and so forth. And what you really need is somebody who's walking around with a lot of drill bits. Yes, I said the word drill bits. And a drill. And you have posted way before the inspection, like a week's notice, maybe even 2 weeks' notice, that the property will be inspected. And that if you leave and you do not leave a way to get in, and you have changed the lock and our master key or key that we had for that apartment does not work, then we will be drilling out your lock. So here's the quiz. How many locks had to be drilled out to get in these 29 units? 7. Yes, we had to drill out 7. Not we, the inspectors, but the property manager had to drill out 7 locks. Why did they have to do that? Well, because of what we just said. People know that that was going to happen, and they just assume that the property manager and the owner would not have the audacity to do that. That made our inspection very successful. We got in every unit. We were able to get in every single attic. So for a property like this that's pretty big and all the it's kind of U-shaped, not kind of, but it is U-shaped. We started on the far left and worked clockwise and inspected all 29 units. And I'm going to describe a lot of the things to take in consideration as a buyer what to expect on a property of this age, and so forth. So some of the things from the outside, you are definitely going to have a brick building, okay? It's going to be structural brick if it's this old, not brick veneer. You're going to have areas around windows. You have the metal steel lintels that are, of course, the support bar above the window opening. And even if you have replaced all of the windows with vinyl replacement windows, which these were, some of them are sliders, some of them are double hung casement, and then you have a fixed pane in the middle for some of the larger ones. Those lintels, usually, after they replace them, you've got some expansion from oxidation, which is rust, and they expand, and it causes the brick mortar to be pushed out because those lintels expand and that metal's got to go somewhere. Well, it pushes and cracks. So you're always going to have some tuck pointing, repairing of some of the lintels needed, and then maybe some of the parapet walls that are up above these types of buildings from 80 years old. And with these, they had properly flashed it with aluminum over the... So the parapet walls were really well wrapped in aluminum flashing so that water can run off and not sit on tops of them. And you also want to make sure that that person who put that flashing on there has created a break edge or a drip edge so that the water can break off that drip edge and drop down and not run down the brick. Some of the other things that we are really looking for outside, the grading, which is to say how the water flows towards the building or away from the building. With a property this age, you definitely are going to end up with boilers and window units for ACs. So you're going to have at least one, maybe two, maybe several chimneys. For this particular property, all the boilers were in one place, and I'll cover those later. So we only had one chimney. And believe it or not, it had a really nice chimney cap on it that it had work done on it, a metal chimney cap, and the flues were able to vent crap properly and not cause issues with the chimney. Getting good vantage points to inspect the roof. Or is there a roof hatch? Either way, we're of course going to be inspecting the roof, and this roof was on or about 12 years old, really didn't have any issues, so that was really a good thing. There was a weird thing off to the right of the property, however, where the slope of the land goes towards the property, and then there was this little, I don't know, bump out 5 to 6 foot wide strip of roof that was meant to create some little housing storage area or access area off to the right of this property. And that roof area was different from the main roof because it was down near the ground. It was very strange, actually, and it had holes in it and it collapsed in one area. So some work definitely is needed for that. But vegetation wasn't a horrible issue. There were some vines trying to climb on the walls exterior. And grading was generally good. There was only a couple places where we advised to add some more topsoil so that water will flow away from the property. Windows, generally, I mentioned there was some lintel, some mortar cracks in some areas, but no settlement cracks of a concern. On the left side of the U, around the back, along the driveway, there were some repaired vertical meandering hairline cracks. Were these shrinkage cracks or were these structural cracks? They were all near window openings. But I had judged most of these as acceptable because they had been already tuck pointed and filled with mortar, maybe quickcrete or whatever, and done really well. A lot of times when you pop out the old single pane aged metal frame windows, to get those out of there, a lot of pressure is involved, and sometimes that does cause some hairline cracks. And keeping those well sealed is really, really the recipe of the day for that. And then when you're in the basement, of course, you want to further evaluate those areas just to make sure that everything looks fine and you're not dealing with some hidden hairline cracks, horizontal cracks, and other nasty things like that. So just carrying on here with these commercial inspections, you know, we are apartment buildings. We're looking at the parking areas also. Sometimes there's just parking on the street, sometimes there's parking lots, sometimes there's garages around and back that we're tucked under. So if you have 29 units and 15 parking spots, not everybody has a parking spot. So that's something you may want to consider, investors out there and realtors, when you're dealing with this. What is the structure of who gets the parking spots in the garage and who doesn't? Are there two different rent rates? This was rather strange. There was five of these 15 spots were taken up by two individuals. One of them had three of them because I guess people in the apartments did not have cars, but this guy had cars and he was working on them in them. Then there was another guy conducting another business using two of the bays. So what do you do about that? Is that okay? Does the previous landlord and owner, do they know what's going on? How do you handle that in the report? Is that something that you just simply ask about? So those are things that are not necessarily inspection items, but to look out for your buyer, you want to make them aware that there's some interesting things going on. for lack of a better term, just call it interesting things. Atypical activities, whatever. Things like if we see piled up tires in the back, those are a hazard because they can contain water and cause mosquito infestation. So that can be a problem. We didn't see that here, but that could be a problem. The parking lot and driveway were really needing some significant repairs. There were really deep potholes, crumbling, spalling, whatever you want to call it. The asphalt was really beyond, I say beyond repair, but I've seen some amazing repairs that people have done where they just chip out areas of voids and they just fill it, roll it, and then cover the other areas and reseal it and so forth. And that may buy you some time in a few years, and maybe that's good enough, but we do have to evaluate and call it as we see it. And then retaining walls. Do you have any retaining walls on the property that you are buying? They are important. They can be very expensive. So there were retaining walls on the back of the parking lot, and they were covered in honeysuckle and vines and other things. So we were able to lean over and get some pretty good vantage points and photos. There was some spalling at one area, at one corner of where two of the walls meet. And these were poured concrete. These were not cobblestone, cut stone retaining walls. These were significant concrete, really well built, not 79 years. It was amazing leaning over and seeing all the way down to the ground. We just did not see any bowing, any cracks or anything. So that's a real plus. We did notice some of these, there were maybe 13 or so of these big blocks that have a rebar U-shaped hook on them that you can lift them up, and they are meant to like line driveways and behind restaurants where they have a hill behind them, perhaps to build the hill up and keep erosion from happening. These very heavy concrete blocks. Well, some of these were put on the concrete parking pads that were at the end of the parking lot up against the retaining wall, and I don't really know why they were there. So we put it in the report to have further evaluation by a licensed structural engineer, simply because these are adding some significant surplus weight to those parking pads and therefore the retaining walls, and I don't know if they are there as a plus or a minus or a neutral. So that is something, because of the calculations of the weight of these items, they probably need to be further evaluated. So we put that in the report. So that pretty much concludes the outside of the property. So remember your windows, okay? Remember the lintels and the brick mortar cracks that could be, you could have some tuck pointing needs to keep these from getting worse. You could have some garages to deal with. You could have some parking lot issues and paving issues, and we talked about grading, and we talked about vegetation up against the building. Vegetation can also lead to wood destroying insects. So these are all things that you want to take into consideration. Now, there was one oddball thing with one of the attics that we inspected. There were seven attics, okay? And one of the attics, when I got in it, I heard very loud, a cacophony, nice word there, of birds and baby birds. So I'm like, okay, how did these birds get in? So I went outside to try to investigate. Lo and behold, where I was, I saw some white streaks on the side of the building up against where the fascia and the gutter meet. And then I saw mama bird fly out of there. So she gave the whole free rent in the attic thing away. So that's a pest invasion infestation that's going to have to be dealt with. So we put that in the report. Other than that, though, the attics, seven of them, all well insulated. So this landlord really spent some money on making sure that the upstairs tenants, maybe there were some complaints about heat loss. But then again, because you have boilers, he is paying for the heat, he or she. And because they're paying for the heat, that's a cost to them, that's an incentive to have it well insulated so that their heating bill is not that high. I did fail to mention a couple things. There were two downspouts that were leaking considerably. One of them in an intersection of how it was two downspout pieces were melded together, and that was not working well. Another one was simply where it connected to the gutter, and probably not terribly difficult fixes by any stretch of the imagination. So they need to be dealt with. All right, so then we ventured inside, starting from the first apartment. So inside, what are things that you need to consider on the apartments? Number one, whatever your municipality is, it's going to have something with fire extinguishers, carbon monoxide detectors, and smoke detectors. Please, please, please consult with your local municipal codes on what the requirements are. Typically, you're supposed to install fire extinguishers in X number of hallways, and they're supposed to be X high from the ground, and you're supposed to have carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors in each unit and hallways and basements, and there's going to be a code around that that you're going to want to know, and you're going to want to do that. So of course, part of the thing with being a landlord is you don't want your tenants to sue you, so make sure you do things to avoid that. The other thing I haven't covered, and there wasn't one on this, but fire escapes. What if you have fire escapes? Fire escapes need to work. They need to have painting, not be all corroded and rusted. They need to be not delaminating metal. The cantilever, whether it is a guillotine ladder that drops down that's counterweighted, needs to be installed properly and be able to work. And people are supposed to be able to get on there and climb down. And you are not supposed to have plants, air conditioners, satellite dishes, or anything that impedes the ability to get out and escape if there is a fire. Also, the windows that access are supposed to work, and you shouldn't have the sashes drop down and crush somebody. They're supposed to stay up so you can get out of those windows and get onto the fire escape. Fire escapes are not something that's included in the general home inspection or commercial property inspection, but they're a specialty. Our company does do them, however, they do have some extra findings, and the repairs of these can be extensive. So do not ignore your fire escapes, investors, because they can add up. And if you have to have a fire escape totally redone, like the metal corner brackets that are holding it into the mortar are like corroded, and like most of the metal is lost because mortar's lost and the metal has corroded and lost a lot of its integrity, that can be extremely expensive. Fire escapes are not cheap. You're talking thousands of dollars of repairs if you have to have one rebuilt, refurbished, repaired. So take that into consideration of your expenses, capital outlays. So continuing on, inside the apartments, I will tell you what we noted in most of these. A lot of times with the older apartments, you have a somewhat of a low ampage panel of probably just 110 amp only, and therefore you have a panel that is really old and they need to be replaced because possibly they're pushmatic, possibly they are just not safe, and you're required to use gas because you can't put a regular stove in there because you would go beyond the 60 or 70 amps per unit. Then when you are in the basement, you have the disconnect, and it may have another little sub panel with that along with the disconnect, and then maybe you have 200 amp service entries that supply the entire apartment building. So that's what we had in this case, and what we encountered in these apartments was absolutely nothing was grounded. Nothing. Does that mean that you cannot have GFCI receptacles at kitchen countertops and bathrooms and they have to be grounded? No, it does not, because the GFCIs do trip off of the neutral wire, so you need a positive and a neutral, okay? And you can build your GFCIs off of that. However, these types of old panels need to be replaced, and a way to handle that would be to consult a licensed electrician. But what we have seen them do, I'm not being prescriptive, I'm just telling you what we've seen electricians do, that is to replace the panel with another panel, like 100 amp or 125, and put GFCI breakers in there, which when they remember, they trip off of the neutral. So if they were to trip, that would turn off pretty much everything in the apartment, the lights, outlets, etc., and prevent an electrocution hazard. So that's how you are able to handle that. So that's your electrical stuff. So I'm done talking about electric. Let's talk about water, plumbing. A lot of times you have stains on people's ceilings above tubs. That means that somebody's drain may have corroded and rusted through. That means maybe a pipe inside the ceiling has had a P-trap leak and it's dripping under the ceiling. Sometimes you have low water pressure and you look for galvanized steel water piping. That can be a very expensive item if galvanized steel was used to plumb the entire building. Therefore, that is going to be a several thousand dollar update to make that all good. That's a very big capital outlay if you have galvanized steel water piping. Also, you want to be aware, some buildings, if they are of like in the 20s, may still have lead water supply lines. So that may be something to consider as well, and they do need to be replaced. Let's see. So water heater systems and boilers. What do you do about those? So if everybody has window air conditioners, do you own them? Or do your tenants own them? That's something you want to check into and read the fine paperwork from the owner as to have they always owned them, or do the tenants own them and are the tenants responsible? The boilers. Boiler systems have insulation on the water circulation piping, which sometimes can have asbestos wrapping around it. So that may need to be encapsulated, wrapped in electrical duct tape, which is not the mafia kidnapping duct tape. I say that with some humor, but you know what I mean, the gray stuff, the strapping tape that is more of what people call duct tape. But the duct tape that I'm talking about is more like aluminum foil that has a peel-off wax on the back of it, and you can wrap ducts with it, you can wrap pipes with it, and it encapsulates very nicely. At very least, you want to make sure you put a couple coats of oil-based paint on any insulation that is on your water circulation pipe. And if some is crumbling and peeling and falling away, that's a different animal. That does need some remediation by asbestos remediation group. A lot of the insulation companies will work with that, and you can pay them to deal with that. But that's not cheap either, so do take that into consideration. Your boilers need really good upkeep by a qualified commercial HVAC contractor who can service these guys every year and keep you happy and keep your tenants from calling you in the middle of the night and causing you consternation and issues with heating. So keep your boilers working really well. This particular property had a 270 BTU unit, which actually may be solely for the keeping the water tank hot for hot water. Really couldn't discern if it was used for that. It would have really taken a lot of effort to traverse the water line to see if that's going for supply line for hot water or if it's going for the radiators. But it did have two 500,000 BTU fairly new boilers, high efficiency in fact. Actually, no, they were not high efficiency, but they were still new. And these were working quite well, and we are looking for stains on the wood floors to see if there's any radiators leaking, and there were not, so that's a good sign to have no leaks. So you want to keep all that working well. If you have an older system that has an older water heater powering or supplying for the hot water for all of your apartments, sometimes that needs to be replaced because that originally was tied in with the boiler system, and that's very common to have your water heater tied in with the boiler system. I mean, it does make sense because you've got something heating water, so why not heat the water inside a tank also at the same time, and and that works great. So that's how to deal with your water heater and your boiler. And so we've covered the electric. And we've covered also the plumbing, we've covered the boilers, the heat, we've covered how people are keeping cool from their window ACs. Let's talk about some other types of things that you'll deal with. You're going to have all types of tenants. You're going to have tenants that have been there, hey, I've been here 30 years. Well, theirs is probably needing the most work because if they're there 30 years and they're paying rent, and they're not causing any issues, then your owner is probably not going to be updating their apartment. So they may have the most ungrounded outlets, probably have no GFCIs at the kitchen countertops and sinks. Their tub is probably the worst condition, soap buildup and stuff. Then you've also got sometimes, you've got the pack rat people who are just disgusting that you just don't understand how somebody can live like that. And they cause all of the roaches throughout the building because they refuse to take their trash out. So when you notice these things, it's good for you to have a property manager who's going to be with you, who's going to be touring through everything, and let them take notes of what types of tenants that you have because they're not all the same. And some of them are easier to deal with than others. So take that into consideration. Just some other observations of basements. This particular place had kind of like a garage, 15 garages, and then it had a corridor that linked all of the basement areas together and had various rooms and just large areas that you could store stuff in. It's just very strange. But the basement was just monstrous and unused. Now, something you may want to consider is how you're going to deal with laundry. Are you going to have coin operated where you have a third party who owns the machines and you're leasing them? They're managing all of that. Or maybe you're getting a percentage of the coinage that is dealt with. When we were at this inspection, actually, the company managing, there was only one washer and dryer in this place, which I found rather strange for 29 people. You probably want to have maybe, you always want to have more dryers than washers because they do take a lot longer. So that's something to consider. Maybe you want to have for 30 units, maybe you want to have 5 dryers or 6 dryers and 4 washers. I don't know, something like that. Just you got to kind of figure out the math, and I'm sure there's some research you can do on the internet for the best formula for that. But that's something you'll want to think about. Do you want to manage your own or not? Do you want to own them or not? So that is something to consider. But the basements, when you have large basements, you know, what are you going to do with them? Like in this particular place, maybe building some fencing with some doors and locks for each tenant, for 29 tenants. There was plenty of room to put a storage locker, but they didn't have one. Are you going to have storage lockers for your tenants? Something to consider. So I hope in this episode that we have about 30 minutes here, we have given you some good information to consider as an investor when you have your property and you are in your due diligence period of how to get it inspected. Remember the locks, remember the tenant types, remember all these things, taking them into consideration, your capital outlays versus your long-term expenses, how you can keep your cash flow going as best as possible with keeping everything well maintained. We definitely heard at least one tenant say, I've been here 30 years. I take care of this. I take care of that. I watch out for everything. You're always going to get somebody saying something like that because when you change ownership, it always scares the tenants. They think they're going to all be kicked out and start over and they're going to renovate everything. So you also want to take, you know, listen to different things that are said. You learn so much with having a representative in addition to the inspector at the inspection. And our company, at least, likes to point these things out. Hey, write that down. You know, that was something important that he just said. These are things to take in consideration. And so we want to help make you successful. That's why this is called the Successful Homeownership Show. With your host, Richard McKenzie, out of the greater Cincinnati area. And our company is First Inspection Services. And until the next episode, we really thank you for listening.